Bold. Brave. Herb. With Dr. Pam Peek.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and this is episode number 552 of the Bold and the Brave Her podcast. Yeah, this is your podcast. Now, today, I just can't tell you how excited I am to be joined by one of the greats in the field of endocrinology and all things bone health, and that's Dr. Clifford Rosen. Dr. Rosen. All right. He's a bone biologist. And in addition, a clinical endocrinologist. He's 30 years into the field of continual NIH funding, first at the Jackson Laboratory, subsequently at Maine Health Institute of Research. And now in the last 15 years, the Rosen Laboratory has been studying all things. Get this. This is what we're talking about today because, honey, you don't know this. And that is the fat-bone connection. And that also involves the GLP drugs, which we're going to be talking about as well. He served as a board member of the Endocrine Society, former president of the American Society of Bone and Mineral Research. He's been an associate editor at the New England Journal of Medicine for 11 years. And has published more than 640 peer-reviewed publications in just about every high-tier journal. Dr. Rosen, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Nice to be here, Pam.
All right. So there you are all bundled up because you're up in Maine, okay? And I'm not.
Right.
I'm down in Florida, you know, so I'm like wearing the little light stuff and we're going to have some good weather.
That's great.
And everyone should also know that Dr. Rosen is a lifelong runner. Doesn't he look phenomenal? I mean, come on now. And I love that because I'm always collecting doctors who walk the talk or run the talk in this case. So there you have it.
That's great.
All right. Now let's get right to it. I'm writing my next book and I'm also working with a group in bone health, all things bone health. And one of the things I stumbled upon was your brilliant research in looking at the relationship between fat and bone. Now, when I first read this and I read your pieces and I've been listening to your lectures, I was absolutely astonished because I didn't understand a lot of this. I was fully aware of the fact that fat, especially when you're overweight and obese, infiltrates organs. And we know about the liver and the heart, etc. Okay, that's all good. However, the bone? What? And then astonishing things that take place. We're just going to say in a woman, you know, an adult, when they drop weight and when they gain weight and what goes on, especially with our wonderful world of yo-yo dieting and we're up and we're down, we're up and what is happening to bone health? We all say pop a calcium and make sure your vitamin D is okay and get that exercise. Oh, what about the bone fat connection? So we're going to start with basics. What is up with bone and fat?
So, Pam, this is an interesting story, and it started about 20 years ago when we were first doing some mouse experiments at the Jackson Lab, and we noticed a lot of fat cells in the bone marrow. And so it's really interesting because few people described over 200 years of anatomical pathology, nobody really talked about what these fat cells were doing in the bone. And over time, we began to realize that there's a substantial portion of fat in the bone marrow. So what's its function? And the common explanation was, oh, when you get older, you start to lose your ability to make certain cells. And so the fat just fills in where there was space and where there were no other cells. So it was sort of by default, just a mechanism to keep the bone marrow space alive, basically. So we got interested in this and we realized that one of the areas where this bone marrow fat seemed to be more present was in mice that were restricted in their diet. And so we turned to one of my colleagues, Ann Klebanski, who's the CEO now of Mass General Brigham, and asked her whether that also occurred in humans. And she had been studying anorexia for 25 years and had been doing a lot of interventional studies to try to prevent bone loss. And she said, Cliff, there's so much marrow fat in women with anorexia. He said, how could that be? There's no fat anywhere else. Some of our patients have 5% fat, but yet it's all in the bone marrow. So anyways, we started doing our experiments, and the conventional thinking after we brought this forward was the fat in the bone marrow was causing the bone to be lost. So in anorexia, we know that women fracture and they have very low bone density. And so one of our initial hypotheses was as they accumulate fat, the fat cells make things that cause the bone to break down. And so that's how we really started to get the human connection. And soon we realized that this was true not only with anorexia, but with these crash diets. So as you start to restrict calories, your bone marrow fat goes up. But the ironic thing was that with a high-fat diet in the mouse, we saw exactly the same thing. So we said, how is that possible? That's even more likely. It's gaining fat everywhere. So you just gain it in the bone marrow. And more recently, thanks to a wealth of great postdocs and graduate students in my laboratory, we've figured out that fat is very dynamic in the bone, and sometimes it's bad for bone, and sometimes it actually serves as an energy reservoir, that it actually can help the bone survive stresses. So what kind of stresses are we talking about? Starvation, for example. So Ann Klebanski and myself and Puna Fazeli did a study at the Mass General where we took healthy volunteers, brought them in, and paid them $7,000 and said, you're staying at Mass General for 10 days and we're going to starve you, but we'll give you intravenous fluids, but we want to see what happens. And then the good part of the experiment is that you can go home for 2 weeks. And then when you come back, we're going to feed you a high fat diet for 2 weeks. And you can eat whatever you want. You can have McDonald's. We'll bring in McDonald's, anything you want. So we did that. And when we did it, we found exactly what we had seen in the mice. The fasting caused the bone marrow to expand in fat. And with a high-fat diet, it caused the bone marrow to expand with fat. So then we looked at the cellular level. And what we realized is that with starvation, the bone marrow is so important. We put out 1 billion cells a second for red blood cells to keep our body going. And you need probably the bone marrow as much as you need a heart and a brain. And so when we looked at the genes that were being regulated and expressed, what we found was that these fat cells were actually helping the bone stay as good as it can be, which wasn't very good, but it was trying anyways. And so these fat cells were actually helpful.
Can I just interrupt you? Because what I'm going to try to do is be the little translator here.
Okay.
So you have someone who's really chronically restricting.
Right.
You don't have to be as severe as an anorectic. Being a woman, basically anyone who owns ovaries has done the weird thing, which is almost starve yourself because you're so desperate to drop some weight and whatever.
Right.
Okay. Now, what I'm hearing is that your body is saying, rot-row, we're in serious caloric deficit, and we need to protect ourselves because the number one prerogative of the human body is survival.
Right.
At the end of the day, it's survival. So the body will do funky things all throughout to be able to do that. So in just concentrating on bone, the body says, okay, well, listen, bones are kind of starving here. We're not getting calcium. The vitamin D thing's looking a little shady. We're not at all supporting the bone appropriately by nourishment and probably not by physical activity either. Anyway,
so that's great.
Now what you're going to do is you're going to bring in fat.
Right.
Okay. And that fat is going to be an energy reservoir to be able to help this individual who's already in deep trouble one way or the other. Okay. Because I think intuitively people would say, well, I'm not eating any fat. I'm not overeating and stuff. So hell, my bones should be empty of fat. Yeah. But instead, fat migrates there energy reservoir, right?
That's right. So where does it come from? So the stem cells in our bone marrow are the source of those fat cells. And what we know is those cells can become either fat cells or bone cells. So when somebody's starving or calorie restricted, there is a drive in those stem cells to make fat cells. And those fat cells then serve a major purpose. Now, they're not perfect and they can't totally protect the skeleton because the bone cells need that energy and you can't get enough energy from all those fat cells. But it's a way to preserve the skeleton. So we thought we were brilliant about this until I was sitting on a committee for a PhD for a woman who I worked with on bears. And when bears hibernate, they collect a lot of fat in their bone. Okay. Even though they're not eating at all. So it turns out that when I said, wow, this is fantastic. And the wildlife biologists around the table said, where have you been? If you look at roadkill, if you look at animals that are starving, they all have tons of fat. And that's why you see the birds eating the bone marrow. So this is a well-preserved technique for all mammals that as they go through a calorie-restrictive phase, they really protect, they try to protect their skeleton.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
Forgive
sure.
any crazy questions, okay? So in a woman, let's just say there's an average woman who takes great care of herself.
Right.
She's average weighted,
yes.
Great nutrition, great fitness. She's doing just fine. Okay, she's not an elite athlete. She's just really on the money. Does that woman have bones that have any fat in them?
Yes.
In an average, normal person with nothing else going on, does fat normally hang out in bone?
Okay. So the answer is yes. And in long bones, in our arms and legs, in humans, about 10% of total body fat is located in the bone marrow.
That's crazy.
It is 10%? Crazy. But with anorexia, that figure goes up to 33%.
Get out of Dodge.
It just fills the bone marrow. So normally, we all have some fat in the marrow. And in fact, what's really, really, really cool is when we're young and we're going through puberty, there's tons of marrow fat. And we never could figure that out. How could it be if fat is bad for bone? How could it be that there's lots of marrow fat before we fully grow and develop? And the answer is those bones need that fat to not only survive, but to grow and to consolidate.
So more energy again.
More energy, right. So that's a really essential part of the first half of the story that in some cases, fat is trying to be protective. The second half is when you eat a high calorie diet and you put fat in your bone marrow, that fat is actually telling the system to start breaking down bone. And that's where the bad part of fat in bone comes in. So if you accumulate a lot of fat, and we just have a paper just published this week in bone research where we showed that as they accumulate these fat cells, they're telling the bone cells to break down the bone. And they do
that's
that
crazy.
Directing traffic in the bone marrow.
So is that because, I'm just thinking, all right, so, you know, the bone must... I'm thinking of what the triggers are.
Right, right. Well, we've been looking at that, Pam. That's a great question. And we don't know. I mean, this occurs quickly. So within 5 days of calorie restriction, you have this tremendous increase in bone marrow fat. So there's got to be a central signal somewhere. We don't know what it is. And then I heard you start to say, well, the bone must sort of know. It's true. The marrow stem cell has sensors that somehow say, look, we got to bring in fat cells to help the skeleton. So it's very interesting. And then when you think about what's happening in the bone marrow, what's happening in the periphery as we all gain weight and start to accumulate fat, the exact opposite happens in that the fat accumulation in our bellies and in our arms and our legs actually are negative to the skeleton. So they're sending signals to the skeleton to start to break down bone. So we have sort of a complex picture. But I wanted to mention one thing because you started to talk about being a woman. As you get older and through menopause, we know that estrogen deficiency leads to a rapid increase in fat in the bone marrow.
And wow. So,
yeah, tremendous. It's the best signal for generating fat in our mice is just by taking out the ovaries. And Sandeep Khosla and the group at Mayo have shown repetitively that fat in the bone marrow is a very constant accompaniment of.
Have you found that replacing it with estrogen?
Yes, that suppresses it. That totally suppresses it. So,
but does it reverse it though?
Yes. Totally reverses it. And we showed in the fasting study that as soon as you start to eat normally, your fat goes away in the bone marrow. Much of your fat.
Wow. See, right now, my HER audience is like, whoa, nothing but bad news. So what I'm trying to look at here is where's the good news here?
Right.
So,
right.
And that would be filed under how do we get rid of this fat that's been hanging out in the bone marrow? Because outside of, just say, for instance, someone threw me on an island and I got to survive for a while until the big ship shows up.
Right.
Okay, so that's when fat is doing me a favor, right?
Right.
But outside of that, right, is my job in life as a woman who is striving to have an optimal health span, doing all the right things back and forth, is my job in life to maintain a homeostasis within the bone between fat and bone. So you said that even average women.
That's exactly right, Pam. You have to get right in the middle in that homeostatic center, where you have enough fat to supply the bone, but you don't have too much that's causing bone loss. So what can we do? So there are things. So for example, if you have osteoporosis, you have a lot of marrow fat, parathyroid hormone, Forteo, reverses that bone marrow fat because it changes the signal to the stem cell to make more bone cells.
Okay, now wait a minute. Hold on now.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to back up here for a minute. Now, osteopenia is a loss of bone mineral density, but you haven't reached a score, and all of women know that it's the DEXA score, that shows that you've passed that minus 2.5.
Right.
All right, now, if you're osteopenic, is your bone recruiting more fat?
Yeah.
And if so, why? Why does it need
to? The signal's there. It's a gradient.
That something's wrong.
Yeah, something's wrong. So as you age, you lose bone. And as you age, you directly also increase marrow fat. So that process is tightly linked. And so for us as physiologists thinking about what does this all mean, it reflects the body's attempt to adapt to lower bone density. And that starts very early in the process. But, Pam, one of the best things you can do is exercise. So my friend for fat in the bone marrow. So my friend Linda Bonewald at Indiana University did this beautiful study in mice in which she gave them treadmills, made them exercise, and then did routine, put them on a wheel, running wheel in their cage. And they did that for 8 months. And when they got to be 2 years old, which is very old in the mouse, they compared that with those mice who didn't do anything. And sure enough, almost no marrow fat in the animals that exercised.
Okay, now just a minute. I'm going to take a deep cleansing breath.
Yes.
Because once again, what I always rave and rant about is physical fitness. So you're telling me that what will help establish a healthier homeostasis, even if you have osteopenia. Now, is that true for osteoporosis?
Yes, it's true for both. that exercise does. Now, exercise itself, and you alluded to it, doesn't do a lot to the bone mineral density. I mean, if it did a lot, we would all just say, okay, we'll just exercise. Because some people have such low bone density that the changes are not. But it does a lot to marrow fat. And so that is interesting because it would suggest that one component of that marrow fat is probably detrimental. The rest is probably good. And so, as you said, getting in the middle, right in the middle, exercise, really, really critical. And these are weight-bearing exercises.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Swimming is not a top of mind here, right, but it's wonderful. I love it. I'm a master swimmer.
Yes.
So here's the gig,
okay,
right? So if the bone begins to decrease in bone mineral density by, in a woman, I'm just sticking with women right now, around the age of 30, plus or minus, okay?
Yes.
All right. Does that mean that as the bone mineral density begins to decrease, that fat is beginning to accumulate a little bit? Okay. Now, if I'm someone, which I am, who's been pretty athletic for decades, right? And when I was around 30 or so, I mean, I was running and, you know, getting ready to marathon, whatever. Okay. So I'm mitigating any excessive fat that's going into my bone. And so if I continue that for decades, note to self, keep this sucker going forever in your life, exercise, then I'm always going to have a small delta. I'm not going to fall off a cliff and lose all my bone and all the rest of it. But here's the thing I'm struggling with. I'm trying to understand what is normal and what is not. You and I are talking about like that middle place and all the rest of it. What if I break a leg or something, which I have, and I'm out for the count? I can't exercise and all the rest of it. Now, I'm not going to talk about the broken part of the bone. That's a whole different ballgame. But for the rest of the body, which was used to having physical activity, my hips, my spine, whatever, what's going on with that, with those bones when I can't do physical activity?
So it's funny because I have a poet who is also a patient of mine, a very famous poet, and she just broke her leg. She's 66. She broke her foot. And as we did the x-rays over time, the bones really looked very demineralized. And she had low bone density to begin with. So struggling with that, what we know is that as you immobilize, and she was in a boot, and she had no gravitatory force on that right foot for 6 weeks, that you get this tremendous demineralization. The bone just starts to lose its mineral. And in the same time, the fat just continues to accumulate. And we know this from the astronauts. So we all know that the astronauts go up in space and they're there for 8 months and then they come back and their bone density is terrible. They've lost, even with their great physical shape, as soon as you get weightless for that period of time, your bones go. And what they've shown, Mary Buchsein at Harvard, brilliant study in mice in space, is that they gain all this marrow fat. And some of it's reversible and some of it isn't. And so what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Is the fat cells there to destroy the bone or is it there to help the bone?
See, that's what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, and we don't know the answer. I mean,
okay, well, that's a good answer. At the very least, what we can tell people is that for crying out loud, to be able to optimize bone health, understanding all of this, is physical fitness, weight bearing. And you know, I've yelled and screamed about this forever and have done a number of podcasts about that kind of physical activity. Now, when we come back, we're going to ask Dr. Rosen, what's going on with those GLP medications? Because there have been some real funky headlines about those medications and bone. The Her Podcast is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, all rooted in nature. In addition to women's multivitamins, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, is presenting the new Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and even libido. This integrative, holistic approach has a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about her life stages, you've got options. You can run on over to your local health food store or check it out at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, or scroll over to solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off your purchase. Women, Solaray's got your back. And we're back. All right, now. This has just been mind-blowing, and the thing that I love the most is you've made my day, Cliff. You've said physical activity is going to optimize all of this. This is great. Now, the first thing I want to do is look at women, right? And they're not on any medication, but they're going to gain some weight. All right, let's say a woman is anywhere from 30 to 50 pounds overweight now, which quite frankly is kind of the average woman right now. You know the stats as well as I do. So there you go. And they're going to gain the weight. And obviously everything we're going to talk about here, we're just going to say it sort of generically. We all know that everything goes straight to hell in menopause. And so that's only going to make it 10 times worse. But let's just say she's going to put on 30 to 50 pounds just because life got to her, whatever. What's going on with fat and the bone?
Okay. So in general, we used to think you put a woman who's gained weight on a bone density machine and their bone density is higher than what it was before they gained the weight. And the question is, why is that? And so everybody thought obesity was protective against the skeleton. But what we now understand is that estimate from bone density by the regular machines really just give you an estimate of overall size of the bone and the rest of the body. So it's factoring in a couple of different things that as you gain that fat mass around the bone itself, you get a distorted quantitation of what the bone is. But if you look with fine imaging inside the bone using CT imaging, the bone is lost. There's trabecular bone loss.
That blows my mind.
Yeah.
Because when I was coming through medical school, everyone just said, she's obese. She's probably got bones of steel.
Right.
And we just wrote her off.
Right.
We didn't.
Right.
Yeah. Like, okay, don't worry about your bone. You're good.
That's right, Pam. There is something to having extra weight on your skeleton. So we can't discount that, a little bit of that. But truly, there's a greater risk of fracture in obese individuals that are postmenopausal. So that's been fairly well established. And in type 2 diabetes, in which individual women have a fair amount of excess weight, their risk of fracture is significantly greater as well.
It's significantly greater. I have a quick sidebar question. So African-American women, don't they have heavier bone?
Yeah, they do. They do. They do. They have much higher bone mass than do Caucasians. And the reason for that's not totally clear, except there's some adaptation in the calcium, parathyroid, vitamin D axis that somehow has been adjusted for over evolution. And we don't know the true mechanism. But generally, if you look at the bones of African-American women, their turnover rate, the way they're remodeling their skeleton, is much slower. So they're preserving more of the mineral. And we think that's probably the reason. Now, what the signal is, we don't know.
Okay, that's cool. I just wanted to ask that as a sidebar. So now this woman has gained weight. She's 30 to 50 pounds up. And now she's got much more fat in her bone. And is that just because, quite frankly, as you get overweight or obese, fat infiltrates organs and bone is an organ?
Yes, it does. And it does that because the body is trying to compensate for more fatty acids that are in the circulation. So they're depositing them into the fat cells. So that is the mechanism of why that happens. So she'll have higher fat mass in the bone marrow. She'll have an increase in the cells breaking down bone at the same time. And that's key because once you have established obesity and high fat in the marrow, you start to break down bone. And if you add a GLP-1, you actually can stimulate more of that bone breakdown.
Okay, now hold that thought. Hold on now.
Okay.
So let's just go back to the, we're going to hit GLP in a second.
Yeah, okay.
So now we have a woman who suddenly light bulb goes off. Oh my God, I'm obese and I have all kinds of problems here. Okay. So now I'm going to drop all that weight. Now she goes and she does it healthfully. All right. So she's going to exercise.
Calorie restriction.
But when I say calorie restriction, that's relative, because if it took her 5,000 calories a day to pack it on,
yes,
obviously she's not going to eat that. So the restriction is reasonable and appropriate. Let's say we bring her down to 2,500, I'm just saying, and she's eating appropriately, and now she's going to exercise as well. She's not an elite athlete, so she's just going to do the usual walking and maybe hit the gym, whatever. Now she's got 50 pounds off. She's all happy. She fits back into her jeans. What happened to her bone?
Great question. So probably not much. With that modest calorie restriction, I would suspect that she's fine, that there's minimal bone loss. And because the bone milieu is the environment, is still got a lot of calories around, it's not going to induce any kind of change in the bone marrow fat.
So what I'm saying is that this individual has dropped 50 pounds.
Yes.
Right? And she did it appropriately, didn't starve herself, obviously ate fewer calories relative to a lot of the calories she was having before. The quality of the calories is different, you know, all the rest of it. Okay. Now, my question is, she packed on fat inside her bone when she was obese.
Right.
Now what's happening to her bone? She's 50 pounds reduced.
Right.
What happened to the fat in the bone? What can she be expecting?
So I think that hypothetically, of course, this is because we don't have a ton of data about it, but I suspect there's not much change in bone marrow fat. In fact, it might go down a little bit because she's not packing in the calories anymore. So there's no signal to store fat. But she probably is losing a little bit of bone. And that's because there is this effect, Pam, that we talked about of weight itself on the skeleton. So if you lose 50 pounds, you're losing a bit of that gravitary force on the skeleton itself. And we've looked at this really closely. So when I give presentations and I write articles, everybody says, so it's just the weight that is causing the change in weight that's causing the bone loss when these kind of extreme weight losses occur. And the answer is there's probably an element of gravitatory force that's important for the skeleton, and then it needs to readapt at a lower body weight. So the skeleton actually is remodeling itself to adjust to that lower body weight. And when it does that, it's a little less in terms of its overall density, but it's remodeled. The shape of the bone actually changes a little bit to compensate for that.
Okay, now she gains the 50 pounds back.
Yes.
You know, welcome to America.
Right.
So now she gains the 50 pounds back. What happened to the bone fat?
Well, the bone fat will definitely go up because the 50-pound weight gain.
But now she has even more bone fat.
Right, right.
So what she's doing is she's accruing over time.
Right.
And that's what's happening.
With the weight. Yes, she is with the weight. The problem is that with that excess fat mass in the bone marrow, it is stimulating those bone cells to start to break down bone. So that balance between what gravity can do and what's happening in the bone marrow is the key element in determining the skeleton.
Now, she's 50 pounds heavy again, and she's just had it. So she calls up her doctor and says, it's GLP time.
Right.
All right. So we all know the GLP-1s. These are the drugs that have become so terribly popular. And now they're actually even available, not just in the injectable form, but in the pill form as well. So now, I'm not going to get into a lot of the mechanism of the GLPs unless it has to do with bone. So now she's doing that. What is going to happen to her bone as she's happily injecting or popping the pills?
So that's a great question. And unfortunately, there aren't a lot of studies. They've been done, but they haven't been released by the drug companies. It's been a real question mark about why they're holding on to some of this data on bone density. But we see very little studies that include bone density, reporting on bone density. But what we can tell you is that the FDA last year signaled that there had to be a notification on the labeling for Wegovy, semaglutide.
I saw that.
There's an increased fracture risk. And some great work from Novo Nordisk in Denmark, where one of their scientists actually looked at bone density over time with both exercise and with semaglutide. And what they showed was semaglutide causes about 1% bone loss per year.
Now, that was Ozempic for everyone out there.
Yes,
right.
Yes. And this was due to an increase in bone breakdown. So the cells, the osteoclasts that break down bone were increased. And so what we don't know is what happens long term. So they lose bone for a year. It's about 1% of the skeleton. We know there's some evidence there's a fracture risk. But what happens long term for those on it? And also what happens if they stop it and they gain back the weight? Do they gain back the skeleton? That's another fundamental question that we don't know the answer to yet, because just they haven't done the studies and they should.
Well, why haven't we done the studies?
Great question. We have a study going on in Louisiana and Maine in which we're giving tirzepatide.
That's Zepbound for everyone out there.
To obese individuals with obesity who are otherwise healthy but want to lose weight. And we're looking at their bone density. And one group is getting just their regular diet and the GLP. And the other one is getting a protein supplement with some exercise. And what we're trying to determine is there something that we can do to prevent that bone loss? So we know with these agents that as you lose weight, you lose lean mass. So you lose muscle mass and you lose bone mass. And that can be 5 to 10% of your lean mass can be lost with these agents. And the functional consequences of that are still not clear. So we know if you measure muscle, it's lower. But what we don't know is it functioning better? Because maybe, as you said at the beginning, Pam, fat infiltrates a lot of tissues. In obese individuals, fat infiltrates the muscle. So one thought with the GLPs is that actually, okay, they lose lean mass, but their muscle function, their grip strength is okay, and their muscle structure and function is okay. They're just losing fat in the muscle itself.
So are you saying then when you do body comp analysis,
yes,
right? Let's say we're doing a DEXA.
Yeah.
So when we see that what we call lean body mass, which includes the tendons, ligaments, all kinds of goodies,
right,
and back and forth, right? But that also includes the fat, doesn't it?
Right. So they're losing fat. And again, this is very controversial because we don't have the data, because nobody's really done the study to look at muscle biopsies and say, okay, there's less fat mass, or MRI, where you can actually see the fat in between the muscle fibers. So that hasn't been done. So we always talk about loss of lean mass when people go on the GLP-1s. And that includes, as you said, tendons and ligaments and muscle, but also bone. And we do know from the bone that there is loss. There's no question about that. But the question is, comes back to that same question you asked me about calorie restricted, starting to a woman losing weight. Is the skeleton just reshaping itself to this lower body weight and therefore may not be harmful and may actually be beneficial? And we don't really know, although there is that greater risk of fracture. So we're trying to understand that. And this goes back to what we talked about at the very beginning with bone marrow fat. The body's very smart. It's always going to try to compensate. The reason we study mice is they have the most rapid way of compensating for almost anything. You can do anything to a mouse and it'll come back and try to restore itself and it'll do it quickly. And so quickly you can measure it in the lab. Same thing happens in humans. There's an adaptation process that goes on. We saw it with fasting, 10 days of fasting. Wow, you get this tons of marrow fat, but then it comes back.
Okay, now I got something wild for you as we're bringing all this together. Because honestly, Cliff, you and I could talk about this maybe forever, and we will. I've just gotten a notice from my team that you have now been appointed a repeat offender for our podcast. So you're going to be back. Now, here it comes. Okay. So I had Marion, the famous Marion Nestle. She's my absolute, she and I are both Berkeley grads and we did our thing. And she went the PhD route. I went the MD route and I have so much fun with her. So she's now 80 and she just published her nth book, God knows, and she's a riot. But she and I both identify with one thing. We both identify as cave women. All right, now let's go to it because this has to do with bone. Now, when a cave woman woke up in the morning, you know, with the Tweety birds because she's hiding out in a cave or whatever, there's no screwing around here. She's got to get out of here and start foraging and she can't just run down to the 7-Eleven and pick up a little something. So she's rocking from the beginning and all day long and hunting, foraging, I don't know, whatever the hell they do, and maybe even migrating the camp or whatever. Okay, fine. Then right around sunset time, she's calling it a day because if she's out there in the dark, she's somebody's dinner. So that being said, there are a lot of hours where she's doing what we now call sort of an intermittent fasting thing. I'm actually a huge proponent of Sachin Panda's work and Walter Longo's work. Yes, yes. They're both your friends.
Yes.
And so I really like that, trying to get in a little light autophagy when you're, I call it autophagy light, when you're doing this, what I love to call non-eating, because a lot of people break out into hives and have to see a doctor if they hear the word fasting. Right. So that being said, they also had many periods, like during wintertime, snows out there, whatever, when they didn't eat very much. They may have saved a few nuts back in the cave or whatever, and their body absolutely had to adapt to that. So going forward, to me, that looks like what Sachin wrote about. And by the way, everyone knows that I always talk about Dr. Panda's work out at the Salk Institute, where he really looked at this whole issue of what he now calls time-restricted feeding, which basically means you eat per the circadian rhythm, and you could have a non-feeding time. The sweet spot appears to be 14 hours, but you know, you could take it up to 16 hours quite healthfully, and it really allows you to control your total body fat, because for the obvious reason, you don't even have that many hours to eat. So, you know, you're going kind of going to that. So what I'm thinking about, you said, well, caloric restriction and whatever, not caloric restriction for time restricted feeding. You're getting in very healthy calories. It's just through a different window with a longer non-eating period. Now, help me understand the effect on bone.
So I would say that there aren't a lot of studies, but the ones that are out there don't show any bone loss with time-restricted eating.
Thank you, God. Just a moment. I'm going to have a drink. No, just kidding.
So yeah. And in our mouse models, that's true as well. If you restrict only over a given period of time. So the parallel for me is going back to bears. Because bears, during the time that they're hibernating, they're not really asleep or anything, but they're going through periods of very little calories. But their skeleton is protected. And that's shocking. They're not moving around. They're not doing anything. And they're very restricted in terms of eating. They're very, very little food. And yet their skeleton is protected. And I think part of it is this bone marrow infiltration that's substantial enough to protect their skeleton, at least over the short-term 6-month period of hibernation.
That's just wild, you know. Yeah, I mean, I love it.
The thing is that, and Panda and others have written about this, starving bears are very insulin sensitive. This is another positive thing about restricting your calories, is that these individuals have really tremendous.
What that means out there is that this is a beautiful way, the time-restricted right. feeding, which means that you eat within a window. It's superb yeah. to be able to control your hemoglobin A1C, your blood glucose. And if you have type 2 diabetes, I mean, you could say goodbye to that if you are consistent with really sticking to this, which I love. Metabolically, there are just so many benefits to doing it more by the circadian rhythm instead yes. of making it up as you go along, yes. which is another thing. Yes. Wow, this is just mind-blowing. I think the takeaway, let's just sort of, because this is a lot of complex science yes. here. So one takeaway is that your bones have their own little triggers to be able to protect you
yes.
as well as get you into trouble.
Right.
So if you're packing on 50 pounds, yeah. you're in trouble. Whereas if you are just doing your normal thing and trying to be healthy and getting in your physical activity, notice how she sounds like a broken record, then you can reach a lovely balance or homeostasis within the bone between some of the fat, which is great to have on board, to have a little fuel and all the rest of it, and back and forth. I love that. I got to tell you just one thing, Cliff, to bring a smile to your face as we close this up. So, as many people know, I'm associated with the Senior Olympics, and we have a really robust group. The average age is 68. You can't be a Senior Olympian unless you're 50. And I have a researcher, Becca Jordre, who is a PhD physical therapist from, I believe it's South Dakota. And she comes out every 2 years because the games are every 2 years, and she does her little measurements, and she's published beautiful work on what happens with their bodies over time, their performance measurements by sport, because there's quite a few sports, etc. All right. When I saw her this past year at the Olympics, and I was helping her out, here's the thing that you're going to love. I said, did you notice something, Becca? Look over here to this woman. She is the world record holder, because we have Masters world yes, record
yes,
holders.
Yes.
She's a world record holder in the sprint. I think she was like the 100. And she's fantastic. But then I saw a side picture of her. And what I noticed in so many of these Olympians, a little less in track and field because they tend to be kind of skinnier,
yeah.
but in the swimmers, whatever, they all have a little something going on with a little leak over that little belt area.
Yes.
And it's nothing horrific. I mean, they have magnificent bodies, but there's something cooking. And yeah. she looked at me and she said, listen, Pam, this is the way this works. The way it works is as you get older, that's your little safety pack.
Yeah.
Okay. And you want to have it on board. So you pat it and yeah. you love it
yeah.
and you call it a day. I just can't yeah. even get enough of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, it just makes me think of the bone thing.
Yes.
Look, I could talk to you forever. I can't, unfortunately. Everyone, we have had the absolute delight, honor, and pleasure of having on Dr. Clifford Rosen, and he is literally one of the world's most renowned experts on bone biology, and he's just filled us in on the fat-bone connection. So thank you, Cliff, for being on the Her Podcast.
Thank you, Pam. It was really fun.
All right, we're going to do this a heck of a lot more. And I want to thank my sponsor, Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs Rooted in Nature, and the new Her Life Stages product. Scope it all out at solaray.com. And take a moment to leave us a review, because we just sit around doing nothing all day waiting to hear from you. And this has been a production of Podcast Health. Remember, your time in this world may be limited. Come on now, memento mori, right? So your time in this world may be limited, but the things you could do with that time are not. So get on out there, create a new balance in your bone between fat and bone, and seize the day. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening.